Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening. This is the Fool's Folly Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Fool's Folly Podcast. As always, we are your fools, Connor Maud.
Darren Hill.
And this week we have the absolutely amazingly talented screen actor, stage actor, Lambda-trained performer.
Oh, we googled the fuck out of you, Drew.
A little bit
Former Trudy's Action. Trudy, thank you very much for joining us on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm really good. I'm a little bit nervous now.
Oh, that was not the way to start an interview with anyone.
We googled you and looking them intently in the eyes as we say that. And you said you've never done a podcast either.
No, never.
Do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
No, never.
You never listen to podcasts?
No, that's terrible. Is that terrible?
I don't think so.
I've got a friend who does a really good one as well in London, and she does them with women.
Oh, okay.
Except, you know, oh my God, I can't even remember the name. I keep meaning to listen to it. It's because I'm a music listener.
Okay.
So if I have time and I'm listening to something, it's the radio.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I do. But I keep saying, I've got to listen to this, and I've got to listen to Naomi's as well. I've got to do it.
I've got to do it.
Well, it'd be nice, because that would build our estimated audience up to 3 people, which would be really lovely.
We took a month off, probably to our own detriment, but hey, we got over the festival.
Yeah,
so we had to take some time off. But So where did it all... Loaded question, yeah. I suppose. Where did it all begin for you? Why did you get into this industry? And was it by accident? Did you kind of expect yourself to be here? Did you aim for this? Is it always something you wanted to do?
I was a fool. so I'm in the right place. Fool's Folly.
Absolutely.
I made a really sweeping decision at something like 8, 9 that I either wanted to be an artist or an actor, because I liked both a lot. I liked acting and I liked painting. And I thought I was quite good at both of them. And I wasn't good at other things. And then I watched Star Wars, and then I thought, yeah, I really want to be an actor.
Which character did you most identify with in Star Wars?
Well, funnily enough, the moment that it really struck home was the bit where Luke, in Star Wars, where Luke is at... Oh, my God. At his uncle's, what's it called? What's that planet called?
Tatooine.
Thank you, Tatooine. And he's eating something that looks like mixed up Weetabix. And I really identified with him. And then I went over to the corner shop to get something in the break. And that was when I thought, that is my life.
That's the moment. Luke eating crushed up Weetabix.
Eating the crushed up Weetabix. It really, really... And food still today, when I see people eating certain food...
That triggers the about being a performer.
No, just food in general can take me off into different tangents, or it's really you know, like people say smells can really take you there, it does still. Yeah. But food also has that sort of thing for me, I think. And then of course Leia, and we played Star Wars as kids, and I was always Leia.
Yeah.
So that was it, and then I just continued. And continued, and as I thought at school, got better and better at it, and then I realised I wasn't.
that's definitely not true. I've seen you before.
And then, as you get older, you sort of go, I don't know. You know, as a child, you're really confident.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Super confident with it all. I mean, I see it in my daughter now as well. So, I'm blatantly made for this. This is definitely going to happen for me. And, you know, the industry is so hard. Mm-hmm. And there is so many knockbacks and so many difficulties within it. And then trying to make a living that your courage, I think, and your self-belief can really get battered. And I think if it's not strong enough in the first place, if it's not really deep, it can really, really batter you. which I think I've had moments of.
I think we all have. For me, it happened, you know, that the idea of that happened really early. It's why I didn't end up pursuing drama school, because I got, we talked about it before, you go from sort of being a big fish in a small pond, and then you get moved into this sort of wider world where you might be the best person in your secondary school, your youth theatre group, but then all of a sudden there are people who are far better than you.
Yeah.
And sometimes rightly so.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt sometimes.
No.
Oh yeah, when you're presented with someone who's definitely more talented than you, it's just a...
it's a killer. Well, and it's sometimes it's not even that. It's just the self-belief. And I've seen it in people. This self-belief is unwavering, and I think that sort of sifts, and not always to the, I think the better, you know, sometimes the more, because acting is an art, like all the arts, we're a sensitive bunch, and it doesn't, that sensitivity and that ability to, and that empathy to move into other people's, to become other people, doesn't necessarily go well with the industry. It knocks against the industry. It knocks against the, and it's developed, you know, that whole sort of, I always think of it as tits and teeth.
Yeah.
But, and I don't mean that in a derogatory term, but that, that ability to be, ta-da, I'm here, and I, you know, and I'm not knocking that, that has a place, but there are others that don't work like, I'm doing this, there are others that don't work like that, and if you don't work like that, and if you are a different kind of performer, it can really make you doubt yourself and struggle in a different way. And it hurts,
Well, because it's one of the, and all art, I think, is like this. And some regular in quotes, I'll let this as well. But it's so tied, our ability to work is so tied to our self-worth as well.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like anyone who's sort of, you know, going in and selling pots and pans, I don't know if they don't sell us quite as many pots and pans in one day, their self-worth is attacked as much as someone who gets knocked back from an audition, or they get told that wasn't quite the right thing to do in that moment. Something like that. It's interesting that it's one of the few industries, you know, the creative industries like that, your self-worth is so tied to your work, you working.
Well, I think...
And your ability to work.
Yeah, I mean, just by getting paid to do a job gives you self-worth, even if you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And there are different, you know... ways in that. I mean, there are jobs that don't give you satisfaction, but you get paid at the end of the day, and you don't think, and you can walk away from it. And I've done many jobs, many as an actor, you do, and I think as an actor, you should, because that you're dealing with people's stories and lives, and so to put yourself in other people's shoes, that widens your scope of characters and watching people, so an experience in life. So over the many jobs, the different jobs I've done, there have been various times of lack of self-worth or you know, whatever, but I think my strongest moment of no self-worth, interestingly, was about a year and a half ago, and I felt that I was no longer going out to work because I was a stay-at-home mum. And my daughter didn't need me as much because she was off at school. And all I just felt my self-worth was on the floor.
Yeah.
Because you don't get paid to be a stay-at-home mum. You don't get... And, you know, and it's one of the hardest, bestest, most rewarding jobs in the world. But there's a real... The way our society looks at it is a real discrepancy.
Yeah.
And the way you look at it yourself, which is why a lot of people want to go back out to work. And obviously I'd go back out to work, but there was no work because I chose an industry that is this. Yeah. I could go back to doing the jobs that I did when I was an out-of-work actor, which is the usual, waitressing, cleaning and all of that. But the problem now was... Who looks after while while I do those jobs. And those jobs don't cover someone looking after the it was a catch 22. And there have been waitressing jobs I've hated, and there have been waitressing jobs that I've really loved, and I've kind of felt like and gave me the buzz that acting could give me, you know, that, that there is, you know, the service industry has a certain sort of thing to that. I've kind of gone in a
I mean, the service industry, particularly in sort of, you know, hostessing and hosting and waiting, is a performance. Is completely a performance. Totally. And you're always playing a character, and you're always, you know, playing it up for... for who your audience are, and that audience changes at every different table, and that can become a fun and interesting thing to do. So, you know, I have to had to sort of, you know, wait tables and things like that in my time. It's really, really interesting.
And you have you know, in different nights, it's not just different tables, but you have different nights. And my favourite restaurant I ever worked at was in our last place we lived in London, and it had an open kitchen. And I particularly love that style, because then everyone is on board. Everyone is making that show.
Yeah.
And I was proud of the food that they served. I love wine. I love food. That's not a lie. I was out. And, you know, and they were... And I think I got to a place of seeing the joy in the work rather than thinking when's the next gig
and that can be and it can be really hard, you know, and like I said, it comes back to that thing about self-worth. Is I'm doing this, but is that really what I'm going to be doing? And you're at odds with yourself sometimes.
How do you keep yourself when you're at those moments, though? How did you find you kept yourself going? Not walking away. Did you ever think, oh, I might do? Did you ever get to that point?
No, belligerent, stubbornness. I don't. I mean, my husband came out of drama school and walked away 2 years in, and he just went, this isn't for me. It's not based on merit. It's not meritocracy. I think it was because he'd done really well at Don Mar audition, Third Recall. He'd really worked on it. He was great in it, in their thing, but he didn't look Greek enough. And I just say he's half Greek.
Yeah.
And he'd shaved that day, and he always puts it down to the fact if he hadn't shaved, he'd have looked more Greek and he'd have got the role. And I think it was at that point that he said, oh, no, this isn't for me. And I've got many friends that did the same. A year out of drama school, 2 years out of drama school. I think... that for me, it was up until I went to drama school late anyway, and that was just that those early years were this real contradictory self-belief where I really felt that I was in the right game, but I was always looking over my shoulder thinking I wasn't good enough, which is why I went to drama school. And then I came out of drama school and I realised that I still thought I wasn't good enough, even though I really enjoyed drama school and got a lot out of it and met my husband. But so I kept going because even if I said, I can't do this anymore, I would still be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And then I haven't left it. I think to walk away, you have to be able to go, yep, I'm done. I've walked away.
You have to leave all of it behind.
Look how great my life is. And there are many, I've got many friends and colleagues that have been able to do that really super easily. Mm. But I know that even if I rang my agent today and said, forget it, I don't want to do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. I'd still be living that way this is an actor's sort of thought process is, today I might get a call.
Yeah.
Next week I might be doing something different. The week after, and because that's how we live. Yeah. We don't know what we're doing week to week, which is why I am appalling at making commitments. I am absolutely. I drive Al, my husband, nuts. I drive friends nuts. I hate making a commitment, and then when I do, I can't make it, or I've changed my mind, or I've triple booked.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about me and It's a miracle I'm married.
Also, it's probably a miracle you're here. Probably three other podcasts. Yeah. To be honest.
Your friend Naomi waiting in her studio. Yeah. Then. It's true.
Actually, yeah, the messages yesterday. I went, oh yeah, I'm doing that tomorrow.
Why?
I act all blasé. It's like, oh yeah, I knew, I forgot.
That's absolutely fine. Well, I think you know you need to check these things. So that what you said, the idea of commitment interests me actually. Mm. So how have you then committed to Julie's world and making that a reality? And because that, I think that's an interesting idea, because obviously you might say that, but actually Julie's world, that's been with you for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that also, Julie's world, Julie Friend, is obviously a character you play.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that development and where that all started for you.
So it goes back to my earlier comment of my self-worth being on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I think I always knew. In fact, I'm kicking myself. So, you know, this is maybe good advice for young people. I should have made my own work a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I did make my own work a long time ago, but with other people, you know, we did 48-hour film challenges.
Sure.
I did do a two-woman show with another friend, a comedy show up in Edinburgh back in 2009. But that was supposed, even back then, someone had suggested to me to do a one-woman show and I kept avoiding it. And that's all right, I think, because it wasn't ready, obviously. I wasn't ready to face that, whatever that is. But then when this particular January, so it was January, and I was pretty low, and then I thought, I've got to do something. Mm. I actually have to make my own work. And I'd been aware of this world that seems really alien to me, the YouTube explosion and then the Instagram explosion as well. I mean, obviously I was on Facebook, everyone's on Facebook, but I knew that there was stuff happening on YouTube. I think my nephew tried to do his own channel. But as with our industry, we ignore it.
Mm.
We don't really, and in fact, even now, I've been in a few auditions recently and people have asked what I'm doing and I've explained it, and you can see the look of slight confusion and what is that? Mm. I mean, there are people that are aware of it, but there a lot of the industry is still carrying on its juggernaut as how things were. Mm. And you know, children and kids and young people aren't watching TV. They're not really watching films. They watch a lot of YouTube.
I'm not. And I, you know, I'm not even kidding. I'm 25 and I very rarely watch television.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then, you know, I was aware of then the whole Instagram thing. So I found it bizarre that people wanted to film themselves in their daily life. A little bit, and a little bit dull. And I tried watching a few, but never lasted. I mean, you know, some of them are 20 minutes long. Mm. And Julie's are only, I don't really go longer than 4 minutes, and even then I think I'm pushing it. But coming to it, I was intrigued by that world, but I also thought, there's something here. So I didn't think, oh, that's what my one-woman show is going to be about, or my one-woman character, because she's not just a one-woman show. She's as you know, it's on YouTube and social media. But then I was thinking, what is it? And so then I started taking bits of. I was thinking, well, I'd do a DIY one perhaps, because I love DIY. So Trudy likes DIY,
yeah.
And I'm actually all right at it. I'm not as incompetent as she is. But then I thought, well, then that's really, I don't know if that, you know, and I kept hemming and hawing about, you know, I like playing guitar and singing, and I kept, you know, going back and forth, what is it? What am I going to do? And then my husband said, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
And then you'll know. So start filming. Let's put this bed together. So we did that. And they had no idea. I am awful with technology. I really don't know what I'm doing. And I was hoping he would help me out and edit it for me. And then he said, no, I'm not editing. It's your job. And so I spent a week editing the first pilot.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of myself that A, I'd learned how to edit it and blah, blah. And then I sat on it for nearly a year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I continued to
make the videos,
working out what I want to show. And I made a spate of them in a small space of time. I realised, you know, I made the pilot, and then I thought, but then how do the others go? Because I can't always make a pilot. I can't always fit in. So then and that was part of the process. That was part of the creative process. And then I kept making these little, so I had about five, I think. And then I sent them to a core group of friends and industry friends and people that I trusted. And most of them were really reassuring and positive as to what I was creating. I did get a difficult feedback from one that was really hard, and I think it was just, you know, too much wine and interestingly just not totally understanding the world I was trying to create.
Sure.
And that knocked my confidence, so going back to self-worth and confidence, yeah. And that's why then Julie wasn't released onto the world for another 6 months.
Right, okay.
Because it really blocked me. Mm. And then I think it was last October, I thought, I went back to them, looked at them, and I thought, you know what, they are all right. I think I've got something here. And then I started. Then I had to do the whole, how do you do YouTube? What are the tags? What are the... So Daryl Eves became my mentor. I mean, have you seen Daryl Eves? He's like a YouTube like guru.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I can't do his accent. It's really interesting. And he goes, hi! He told me all about the tags, and I'm sure there's more that I don't understand and don't... There is more I don't understand, don't know. But then I just thought, oh, let's just get it out there. Because that's part of Julie as well. Because Julie, I mean, you know, I talk about her as a character. She is a character. She is from me. She's the closest character I've played to me.
Okay.
Because I've taken parts of all the bits of myself that are really embarrassing and that I hate. Mm-hmm. And I've blown them up massively. And so she would be rubbish at the actual YouTube getting it out there. So I just sort of, you know, there are moments where I think, I wish I knew a little bit more because I could do even better here.
You do a bit more, yeah. I think that's probably all part of the learning curve, though. So I'm interested to know, so did you come at it like, I'm a performer, this is going to be an outlet for me to perform, or did you come at it like, this is an idea I have and I need to do something with it? And are they the same thing, I suppose?
I feel like you've asked the same question twice.
yeah, I think I have as well. So, I guess just the first part is, did you come at it like, I'm performing, this is going to be an outlet for me to perform, expecting for it to grow and develop?
No, I think... did I want... Oh, I can't... It's a chicken and egg scenario, I think, because I think I wanted to create a character.
Yeah.
And I had seen this world and how it had developed, and I thought that this is what I want to hold the mirror up to life at this point. I love the mirror and art thing, I always use it. And then when I went back to it in the October, so that was in the sort of January, February when I first started, I'd had the thoughts the previous year, and then in the October, and I started drip feeding her out there, I had another chat with another actor friend of mine, a comedian, and she said that I need to book an Edinburgh show, that I need to... And then I thought, well, this is it. And then that all sort of... I think I saw that Julie would become a theatrical experience.
Okay.
And the two would go hand in hand, hopefully. They are really... It's really... And it's been really interesting doing the festival and seeing her live, and each informs the other, and she's still evolving and changing. And another friend commented, which I hadn't thought about, is that I've been rehearsing Julie live, which is I suppose something that I hadn't thought about and is kind of a new thing in that, you know, normally we develop the character in the rehearsal room in a safe place privately, and then we have the dress and press and then we're live ready to be either hailed or
handed.
But Julie's been, you know, I look back on older vlogs, and actually I've got some vlogs that you didn't even make the cut.
Hit the cutting room floor.
Yeah. And because they don't look like, to me, they're not Julie. They're a bit too much like me.
Okay.
So does that answer the question?
I was
where do you find the distinction between, when you're watching those and going, that's too much me and that's too much Julie? Is there a specific thing in those videos where you go, no, that specific thing means that's too much me?
The main thing is when I don't sound Welsh enough. I mean, I know I am Welsh, and I know that I do sound Welsh, especially when I've had a few wines or I'm angry. But generally, day to day, my accent's always been there, but it's softer. Julie's is way, way more pronounced. Yeah. And I tell you what, the hardest thing between Julie and me, the two things, is when I'm singing. So Trudy definitely has a singing voice.
Yeah.
And so does Julie. And trying to find the line between them sometimes. Because, at first I thought Julie would just be a bad singer, but I don't think she is.
Mm.
But she doesn't always get it right. Equally, though, neither does Trudy. So that can be quite hard. And actually, Al will look at things, especially the music ones, and say, you sound too much like you, Trudy, singing there. And there is a difference, and it's live, it's easier, because when I'm live as Julie, I'm in the flow and I'm in the character, it's easier to do. But when I'm doing a vlog sometimes and I'm singing a song, just it can sit back and it's not as pronounced. And then also my I think Julie is her clown and her... I mean, you know, I make malaprops and stuff like that, but I think her I don't know, is it an innocence to her? I just know.
Yeah, like, you just know.
I just know the difference. Yeah. And also her physicality, her facial expressions, and then her physicality live is really pronounced, where it's not on vlogs, but when you see her live, she's... got very different physicality to me. But it's interesting sometimes when I've been playing her, like when you play any character for a while, that character starts to seep into your everyday life. So I find myself going,
and doing the Julie-isms
to people. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to think it's really me. It's not me, it's not me. It's not me.
I wanted to ask about your writing process, and if you sit and write Julie, or particularly with the video stuff you do, is it a case of just getting up and working it out and doing it orally, or do you sit and how do you put those together?
So I improvise the Julie vlogs, primarily because I'm really lazy. and I don't want to be dealing with the
writing,
I don't want to be dealing with the indie, but I am starting to realise going forwards that I have ideas and I think, oh, I'm going to do that. But some of the best ones are where I have no idea and I don the robes, the overall and hat, and then I start talking and, you know, I almost make myself laugh. They're nice, but I think it's that, I'm going to sound like a YouTuber now or an Instagram, looking for content is exhausting. It's, you know, and going back to my, there was a question earlier about my commitment issues. I do have commitment issues. And so the fact that this is the longest character I've ever played. So it's lucky that she's quite close to home. And I'm really pleased I've seen it. You know, just doing the festival.
Yeah.
Getting a whole show together and not walking away back in January from it because it was all too hard is a real sense of achievement. But the vlogs I improvise, I think that I'd like to write a few, because if I write them, that takes time, and then you have to learn it, and then you want it to come out, and you have to know it so well that it looks like it's off the pat.
Yeah.
That would make the editing easier, because I don't have to find the story.
Yeah, you can hit the beats and things like that. Yeah,
the story's there, and then it's all about, you know, and the gags are there, whereas I'm doing it the other way, whereas I'll improvise stuff. It may not be particularly funny, and then in the edit, I make it funnier and do it that way. But I don't know how much longevity that has. I don't think it does. But then the other thing is getting content out there all the time is it's hard to keep up with. I mean, I struggle. I mean, people put a vlog, some of the big ones put a vlog out every day.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind, by that point, they're so big that they've got a complete team behind them. They're being filmed.
They've got editors, all that sort of thing.
Got all of that. They didn't start out like that, and it would be interested to see how much they did anyway. Probably a lot. A lot of them started young anyway, and if you think about it, you know, you're young. You when you don't have children, you...
Which we don't, as far as we know.
Yeah, knock on the door in a few years. You don't know.
DNA test results pending.
Yeah, that was it for you.
But when I, you know, if this was around when I was in my teens, 20s, I probably would have been doing it. I probably would have. Do you know what? If Big Brother was around when I was 18, I probably would have gone on audition for that. I don't know. Oh, it makes me think. I think there are amazing things about it all, about social media. I also think there are really toxic things, and I think that it's still a massive learning curve for people, putting their lives out there constantly, which is interesting. And you know, and there are people. In fact, someone mentioned it the other day at Screaming Alley that his wife loves Julie. He wasn't so keen, and I think he works in PR, and I think he works for that side of things, for the
Instagrammers and the influencers and all that.
I think he has some sort of connection with it, and he said, but it's not real, you're not real. And I kind of get where he's coming from, because I'm hiding behind a character, but as far as I see it, I've seen this explosion. And I've seen, where does it leave the artists? Where does it leave the actual real photographers and the writers? Yeah. You know, because the blogs are massive, and anyone can be, like Julie says, anyone can be an influencer these days.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, it allows creative people to get through the bullshit. You know, you haven't got to get the agent or the casting director to say, yes, you're worthy, come into our gang. If so I'm coming at it from a creative point of view, not as Trudy in, you know, putting my Trudy's life up there. I've created a character to put my life up there, and I see it a little bit in the same way that mockumentaries did for reality TV. I'm not comparing myself to those genius. Is it Waiting for Guffman? I can't remember his name that did it. And you know, and then Ricky Gervais with The Office and all of those things. But it has that thing where, you know, Ricky Gervais there are all of these reality TV programs, and then they write, him and Stephen Merchant write The Office. And when it first came out, I remember going, is this real?
Yeah.
And that was nice. And that's kind of what I wanted with Julie. And I think that there's a fine line between naturalism of her, but and the caricature, And, you know, and there are people that do. Someone sent me a message on Instagram telling me about her life and wanted to know a bit more about Julie.
Oh.
Which is really sweet.
Yeah.
And I had to say a little bit about Julie, and then I said, hi, my name's Trudy, and I'm an actor. Yeah. And Julie is my creation. She hasn't got back to me since.
Oh, no.
I felt a bit, but, you know. But I like to think that there is an innocence to Julie. That, you know, I'm not. Yeah, I don't want to be knocking what that world is.
Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I see Julie as someone that's lost, and like a lot of people looking at social media and wanting connections. And it's interesting, you know, that for me, the main themes of Julie, going back to, you know, is it going to be DIY? Is it going to be guitar? It's none of that. It's actually about her loneliness and her mental health, which I think is key when we're dealing with social media.
Because I was gonna ask, that leads on really nicely, is that you talked previously about also the toxic bits of social media. And for anyone who didn't see, so Trudy's, was it the first showing of Judy's World during the festival? The first full length.
Yeah.
Was only about a month ago now.
In April, wasn't
at,
it? Yeah.
At St George's Church Hall in Ramsgate, that's where it was.
For Loop the Loop Tour,
And during that show, because I had seen some of the clips on YouTube, but I didn't know what to expect from the show. And what struck me was, without wanting to give anything away for people who might see it later down the line, is there were moments of real sadness to it. And what I wanted to ask is, how did you, when you're putting that show together, how do you balance getting the timing so you get the jokes, but also playing the truth of the moment for the sad bit, so that they all land kind of equally? Does that make, have I worded that question really badly?
No, it's a good one. I don't know the answer though. because it's, so the writing, going back to it, which connects back to the other question about the writing, writing's kind of new to me. I've dabbled in it a few times with writing with other friends previous, and then I lose my commitment, but this was really, I felt that this was a story I really needed to get out. And so you write a load of words and it's shit, and then you go back to it and then you write another load and then another load, and then you edit it and then you rewrite, and I think someone said writing is rewriting or writing is editing, which it totally is. And you know, the perfectionist in me wants it to be just there. It's like when I write a song, well, it's just, is it there? Is the song there? You know, it's not there. You've got to work in it. Well, for me. And then, so I had a great partner in crime, Ellie Jones being my director.
Yeah.
And she was not just my director, she was my sounding board and my dramaturg. So I see her as that. And she would just keep asking me questions. She asked me questions in the first meeting we had when she first approached me to do Julie's World. And I was like, I don't know the answer to that. but then I'd go away and think about it, and then I'd come back. And, you know, she was the one that steered me to something deeper. Even though I knew that there is something deeper there, and even though I believe that comedy and tragedy coexist, I'm a massive... I don't want to watch a rom-com. And equally, something really, really dark and disturbing doesn't do it for me. I think that life is that balance between the two. It's like, you know, in Chekhov, when it's done correctly, it's that someone's absolute drama and tragedy is excruciating, but also hilarious. You know, because it just can't help. That's how we deal with it. And we deal with tragedy a lot of the time in humorous ways. And I feel there's still more work to be done on the One Woman Show. And we're about to do an Arts Council bid to take it further. So for me, the tragedy in her is not quite there yet, but I feel a certain road. I think the main thing about landing the, going back to your question, landing the joke and then, you know, taking people down and then back up again. Mm. It is timing, but it's truth. It's like anything. If you believe it, if you believe your world, then everyone's with you and they'll go on that journey with you. I think that's the only way I can look at it. I don't think, right, this bit, it's a feeling for me. This bit's got to be really funny, and then this bit's, you know, I don't know. And also people laugh at different things. You know, some people will laugh at the things that I'm... And they're going, can I laugh at that? And for me, because it's awful. It is awful, but this is her journey and watching her fall. And I've always been attached to clowns that fall apart. And I think they're the best, the clowns that fall apart. I played Feste once in As You Like It, Twelfth Night. Get my chair. I played Feste and I just concentrated. They're hard, Shakespeare's clowns, but I just concentrated on her story and what made her sad. And I think if you can do that with his clowns, it won't seem dated, and you will have audiences laughing with you. And that's how I played. I've played Feste as a pre-trans op. Is a woman that wants to be a man.
A pre-op.
Pre-op. I don't know what all the word, you know. And this is going back 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even very, I decided that she was in love with Olivia, which is what normally people do with Feste. and it's normally played by a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, how do I make this work? Is she gay? I think she is, but I don't think she's happy with that. I think she's not happy in herself, and that's how I played it. But she was a drunk. Most people play Feste, I suppose, like that. And that then takes you into that sad, deep, deep sadness, but then it's really, really funny.
Yeah.
It's a long
one.
I could talk.
That's why I wanted to do
this podcast.
You should
do a podcast.
Oh, Julie doing a podcast and being the host of a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine that.
That I did think that at some point that I should, you know, there are influencers that have done them as well, a cooking one, and
they are.
Well, we'll produce it for you. Okay. So there you go. We got it all.
You got it. Brilliant. Yeah, that would be funny. I dread to think what she comes out with.
What sort of questions she would ask people and things like that.
She's really slow as well. Her brain doesn't work. So it's the part, her brain doesn't, I've got a lot to say and I can keep going and going and going. But Julie does lots of, but because her brain's so slow, it doesn't work very fast, which is why I need the editing to speed it up.
To make those jokes actually come in quicker.
Yeah.
You say that during your show, that there's a section where I don't think this is giving enough away, where you get two people up from the audience to take a photo with you.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, and you made a quip during that when you got someone to take the photo. And they hadn't put their phone on. They turned it off.
Yeah.
After you previously telling them, please keep your phone on. And you made a really...
Is that why you tell people to keep your phones on the off chance?
No, it was just... That line is just...
It's funny.
It's just a gag. It's just a... So, you know, normally people say, can you turn your phones off? Yeah. But actually, Julie's world, it's devices.
It's all online,
But Julie made a really... Julie, made a really good quip about something that had happened previously in the show where, and we'll talk about it if you don't mind,
because
it
was great.
But you said, I've already had the power cut. I've got a lot to get through. And the audience erupted with laughter because it was so quick and you'd call back to that thing that had happened. It was just great.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just great.
Imagine it's really quick, yeah.
So it's... the power cut.
Yes.
And I've stated this on the podcast, because I hadn't seen the show.
Yeah.
I also, because of the way that day ran,
yeah.
I wasn't really in the room when you were rehearsing it much. Yeah. So I didn't, I came into it as kind of as blind as I could.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought that was part of the show.
Yes, a lot of people do.
Did. Because I thought, I thought, that's a brave choice. But it seemed appropriate, right, for the character. Yeah. She's doing this talk, yeah, and then at 10 minutes in, the lights would go out. And because you carried on so diligently, and I love the fact you got the audience to light you with their phones, I thought, no, in 10 minutes. And because I'd seen Ellie have a small speaking part in the previous show that day,
yes,
I just thought she was doing that again. Yeah. She's just doing that thing, right? Yeah. How was that for you? What was that?
what was going through
your head when that happened?
So being in the moment and being Julie, I thought, I can riff this. This is okay. I'm all right. I've already got the audience on side anyway. It was my first live performance of the whole show, so I was absolutely terrified, which you usually are for the first few shows anyway, as you know. They're the worst.
I'm scared for all of them.
And then you get into a run and then you get bored and you think of things to do. But when that happened, there was a little slight panic, but then I thought, well, that's when it became really like the vlogs, where she just keeps going in the vlogs and talking to her audience that she thinks is listening. So that was okay. And then I sang the song to kill time. And the bit for me that was the hardest, I didn't want to come off stage, because I thought, if I come off stage, I can't come back on. I don't know how I'm going to do that. Right. So when Ellie said, Julie, could you, it's going to take a little bit longer, do you mind stepping off for a second? I was really reluctant, and I came off. And when I found out that we had to go and get in a car and go and get someone out of bed to get to the box, that just sort of sent me reeling. And I sat backstage and thought, well, I gave it a good try.
Oh!
So I actually thought it was, in my head, I thought that the electrics weren't going to come back on, and we were just going to say thanks to everyone.
So you just went to the worst possible scenario in your mind.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And then the other voice in my head said, but what if you've got to go back on? And it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. How am I going to get them back on board?
How you need the energy back.
It's the energy back. It's like the game in drama where the ball drops. Don't let the ball drop. And the ball's really, really dropped. It's dropped and it's a medicine ball. I'm like, I can't get it back up. So I was a bit panicked, but it didn't seem as long as it had been. And Katie gave a brilliant introduction for me to come back on, which helped me pick that medicine ball back up. And then I thought, well, that's the worst that can happen. I'm here now, I'm in it. I think in a weird way, it gave me a new self-belief and confidence that before I went out there, I didn't have. I was thinking, oh my God, what if it's awful? What if it's, And the hardest thing about doing that show were, it wasn't to a blind audience. And so some people would think that to friends, it would be easier. But it's not.
No, it's not.
It's
definitely easier to do it to strangers.
It's just easier to do it to strangers, and friends that weren't aware of my work. So if it had been friends that knew my work, I was happier. But it wasn't. It was for people that didn't know me.
Wow.
And
as a performer. Yeah. So that was what I was most terrified of. But then, you know, the Power Cat, and then I went back out, and then all of those fears just kind of went, and then I just...
We're in.
I was in it then, yeah. But interestingly, out of the worst things to happen, new ideas come. So watch the next show.
Well, I'm going to have to, because of that Power Cut, I sort of opted to stay out of the room. So I actually haven't seen most of Julie's World now. I saw the first 10 and like the last 5, and that was it. So, Arts Council, if you're listening, which you aren't, make sure you give Trudy the funding, just so I can watch the show again. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Or we'll fund it. We'll have a whip round.
We'll have a whip round.
Me and you.
Yeah.
20 quid.
Just me and you.
I think Julie's gonna You know, there was a plan to do a crowdfunder. So if the Arts Council don't come good, I'm happy to do that. We've also, I mean, for the festival, the money that I would have got for the festival, we've ploughed back in to the project, because I felt that was the right thing to do rather than go and spend it in TK Maxx. On rugs. So hopefully, and yeah, I'm supposed to be busy doing a Julie pack for all the theatres around here to say, you know, have Julie. She will come in and Trudy will come in and talk about social media to some teenagers in schools and mum and baby groups. Because I think I am really fascinated by what the effect social media has on us. I think more than I realised when I first... I think it was just I wanted to do a show or I wanted to be doing something initially, but it has evolved that I am super interested. And I'm really super interested by how it's changed mothers and how... And I talk about that in the show without giving too much away, but how more connected it helps them feel to the outside world, but actually how isolating it still is because they're not living their highlight reel. So I find all of that very interesting, and I find it really interesting for teenagers as well because of people are selling their lives online. Everybody's selling them. We're all a magazine. You know, we're all Homes and Garden or... Hello, we're there. Look, this is my best selfie. This is my filter. Look how beautiful I look, or you know, is the right angle.
It's an aspiration now for kids who want to be Instagram influencers and want to be YouTubers. And things like that. And don't get me wrong. I think we'd all love to be able to take photographs and get paid thousands and thousands of pounds for it.
Yeah.
Because who wouldn't want to do that? Yeah. But I think it takes a combination of skill and luck and graft that I don't actually think... Because, you know, you talk about actually... So that's curious. How long did it take you to put together, like, a Julie's World episode?
It can take a week. Mm. Because from the conception to the filming to the then getting a chance to... If I wasn't a busy stay-at-home mum, and Julie's a busy stay-at-home mum, and I am, that's where our worlds collide... maybe I would be able to do it quicker.
Yeah.
But just day-to-day life, and then I've got to go up for a casting or things like that. Yeah. It's just really, really difficult. So, you know, some weeks I manage two and I've got two out. And then, but then 2 weeks will go by and I haven't done any.
Yeah.
I've just put one out today. But going back to the aspiration, kids aspiring to it, and I hear you, it is graft. But my daughter, on the way to school today, I was doing some more filming, and she had a pretend phone and was making her own YouTube channel. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that. And she keeps asking, she wants, you know, obviously when your parents do something, they want to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm already struggling with that. She wants to be an actor and she wants to go for auditions. And now she's saying, I want to make my own YouTube channel. And there's a part of me that's thinking, well, if you do the work, then fair enough. And that is the future or your future, or maybe it's not. Maybe it'll just be a flash in the pan. But at the same time, there's a massive part of me going, no, I'm doing it not because I want... I'm not doing YouTube like that. You know, I'm doing it because I think that it's not such a great thing for us. But it's a real pull. And then it's also because, you know, my make-believe characters, Julie's make-believe characters, are obviously taken from my family. So Julie's got a daughter.
Yeah.
And so there has been stuff with my daughter in, but it's usually a voice or something else, or it's very fleeting, or it's, you can't see her properly. I think there's only one where you see her properly, and that was in the very early pilot. But ever since, she's kept way, way back, because I don't want to do that.
Mm.
But there's the part of me that is saying, well, that's what they do.
Her reality, and that's where it's going.
Yeah, and if I'm going to do the reality is I would put my child, I would sell my child out.
Yeah.
it's a real conundrum. So watch that space. Yeah.
Well, the highest paid YouTuber last year was an 8-year-old boy.
Yes.
Who got Ryan's Toy Review, who got paid something like $30 million last year.
I think Julie mentions him in the show. She doesn't mention the name.
Oh, but...
But she does do kids... One of her, you know, she does subsections. She does kids and social media. Mm. And she mentions him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's... I mean...
I just... Do you find... Because you must about spend... correct me if I'm wrong, do you spend a lot of time now on YouTube?
No.
No.
Right. Not on YouTube. I literally upload my vlog and do no interaction whatsoever. I think I'm subscribed to a few channels, and they always tell me I've got messages, and I think, oh, Julie's got a message, and I go in, and it's not. It's Lily Singh's latest vlog, Joe Thatcher. What's his name, Joe? You know. No, in the early days, I watched a few just to get a vibe. And really, if I was really good at my job, I think I would do a lot more, because they would inspire me to do... They would help me with my content.
Yeah, content and things like that.
Because Julie watches it.
Yeah.
Or should be watching it to do her content.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was one where Lily did a rap and she shows you how to make a rap. And I was thinking, brilliant, I'm going to write a rap. Julie's going to write a rap. I'm still going to do it, but I haven't done it. I have all these ideas and then I never get around to them, because just life just sort of passes you by. But but Instagram, I'm more on Instagram now than I ever was. Still nowhere near what other people use, I think. But I'm very much aware that I have to put something out at least once a day. It doesn't always happen. And also trying to connect my YouTube to Instagram. I don't know the technicalities of that, but I'm going to find out how I can do that to make it easier. Instagram's great for instant little bite-sized pieces of Julie where I don't have to spend ages editing it. But then the annoying thing is, sometimes I want to be able to edit those little bite sizes as well, or I want the Instagram, because I have more interaction on Instagram with people than I do on YouTube. I have a lot more people following me that I have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
I don't have that on. I think the subscribers on YouTube all know me.
Does Julie interact with, like, comments and things? Do you reply to comments?
I do reply to comments. Yeah. I reply to the comments, and so what I do is I do a quick scroll and like a lot of things to show that Julie's...
Is actively...
Interacting, because that's the whole point. You're supposed to have a...
That's
whole
the whole
community.
Point of it,
Hashtag community.
Hashtag community, yeah, of course.
But it's exhausting, and I don't want to be on there, and it's not really my thing, and it's not, and, you know, it's a rabbit hole. You can just get caught down the rabbit hole.
Terrible.
But the whole thing is that Julie isn't successful on this, so it would be weird if
she suddenly got massively famous. I'm going to start seeing Julie doing brand deals for for diet tea and things like that.
It would be. She messaged Wilco. She messaged Wilco and told them she was up for SponCon, so hashtag. It was my I was struggling. It's really hard writing the show for Julie's easy, but writing the little vlogs on the Instagram bits are really hard, because it's where people that don't know her and don't know the vlogs can miss the humour.
Mm.
So it's really hard to get her humour out there. And I tried interacting with some of the other mums on there. There's a lot of mums on Instagram, quite successful ones. But it's really hard because she is a parody of that
of
world.
Of those people, yeah.
It's really hard because I don't want to be unkind and I don't want to bring anyone down, and my humour isn't that, and neither is Julie's. It's a satire of that, where we're all at, I suppose. So I was struggling to interact with people on Instagram. I was thinking, other than do the likes, and then it was my husband that said, oh, you need to just... And what's brilliant about, you know, B&Q and Wilco, you get ads, all of it is ads a lot of the time on Facebook as well. So it's a really good opportunity to get back at the ads. You know, I hate ads, so it's really nice to just go, hiya, Julie here. Oh, I like your cushions there. I do DIY, so if you're looking for some, you know, that's really, it's a nice little way of her existing in that world without compromising anyone else's influencing or Instagram.
Brilliant. So I guess as a final note, what would be your ideal for Julie? What's next for Julie? What would you want her to go on and do?
I wanted to do a TV show.
Okay.
I really wanted to do a TV show.
We'll start that petition now.
So, I mean, the immediate is Ellie and I working on the Arts Council bid, because we want her to run. I think she does need to run in a few... do gigs, a few theatres. The idea is, I still haven't given up on taking her to Edinburgh, probably next year. I got offered a free Fringe place this year, but it was 11 a.m. and Julie's not an 11 a.m. So that hopefully is the near future. But I'm also keen to start mapping out a pilot TV episode and story arc, because I'm from that generation and that world, I don't really see, you know, I suppose that's why I don't put my all into vlogging every day and stuff, because that's not how I see her. That informs who she is and where I want to take her, but I want to, yeah, I see her as a 6-part episode, and you see, we see her beyond the vlogs.
Right, okay.
And that's what's great about the theatre show, is you see her beyond the vlog, you see the real her, which is why you see the pain in her and stuff like that. And also the other characters are starting to permeate who the other people are in Julie's life. And I'm interested to start working and writing those if I can. I mean, you know, maybe I've only got one voice, I don't know. And you hear, in the show, you hear, you know, Roger's voice, because there's a bit of her nemesis on Instagram. And so, yeah, that's what I want in the long term, I think.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thanks so much for coming down and talking with us, Trudy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was great.
That really was excellent. Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. Brilliant.
You'll be getting on it next. Julie's World, the podcast.
And we'll be here going, why did we give her a platform? Why is our one not taking off? Oh, wasn't she great? It was an amazing episode.
And spoiler alert, guys, it's a new day. a little behind the scenes for everyone who listens. Darren and I don't record the outros on the same day. Sorry.
What happened? Did we just forget? Did we forget, or did it just?
I think we went and got lunch. I think that's what we did.
Well, we'd done our hour of work for the day,
and we needed to reward ourselves. We did. No, but honestly, though, Trudy was a phenomenal, phenomenal guest. And the reason I actually wanted to bring up that it was another day is because Darren and I have a very strict editing process. We normally try and keep it under an hour, but we listened back to it today, and the episode is so good that it is definitely going to be in over an hour. And it's just when you get such a good conversation with people, it's just really nice. And she's such a good conversationist, and she's got such an interesting story, and the way she talks is so brilliant, and she was a phenomenal guest.
And not to give it, so we don't edit loads.
No,
we don't edit loads, and we try and edit where we try and edit where it is either appropriate for whatever reason. If there are gaps or things that happen in the recording process, try and keep it smooth. But that one was just an absolute dream. There was nothing in it. The first time I listened to it back, there was nothing. I normally make notes of things that I think we could cut if we need to. And I had a blank page by the end of the time that I'd listened to it. There was just nothing.
But it was great. And obviously, you can find, we'll put links in the description for everywhere that you can find Trudy and you can find Julie. And she'll be out there, and you can follow and watch Julie as she Julie Friend as she grows and develops.
As always, if you've got any questions for us, our email address will be in the description, as will links to all our social media. But apart from that, thanks again for listening. We are your fools, Darren Hill
and Connor Maud,
and we'll see you next time. Bye, friends.
Bye.